The last talk of this advanced course will be given by Annick de Ribeaupierre from here.
Good morning, everybody. Can you hear me? Okay, I think there is some similarities in these morning presentations. First, I am also going to present some large multivariate studies. Second, I have also been kind of out of science, not as far, but still as Andrea, so it has been some kind of an effort to come back here and prepare a presentation. But first, I would like to thank Pierre Barouille and the Archive Piaget to organize this course and to invite me. Many of you know that I certainly have a personal pleasure in seeing the courses of the Archive Piaget resuming and taking their kind of old, very convivial atmosphere of discussion, and thank you very much. So, what I am going to focus on today is working memory capacity and I would like to drive you to the lifespan and extend some of the developmental questions to lifespan question. So, one can wonder why is it interesting to go into lifespan or into a lifespan perspective when one has been adopting for many years a neo-Piagetian perspective? Well, first, it is of course not very surprising if we base ourselves on Piaget's old saying that there is no function. We cannot understand the function without understanding the genesis, and there is no genesis without a function. I think that if we want to understand functioning in adulthood, we have to go through development. Most developmentalists are convinced of this, or so do I hope, but also we do have to understand how it kind of de-develops, just to be extended, to change across the lifespan. Well, a second reason why I was drawn into the lifespan was, and I have a very vivid memory of this, was when I read a special issue of Developmental Review in 90. There were a number of chapters provided by child developmentalists and cognitive aging researchers. At the time, I was myself conducting a longitudinal study on young children, and I was really struck of the similarity between the hypotheses that were put forward. But I described it at the time as a kind of four-corner approach. On the one hand, you had children theoreticians. On the other hand, one had cognitive aging theoreticians. That's just half of the picture. And then one had people who were pushing forward a hypothesis of general activation as a general mechanism for driving age differences. On the other hand, one had a theoretician pushing forward the hypothesis of inhibition, as if these two global mechanisms were exclusive of one another. So reading this, I thought, well, the hypotheses are just about the same around, and coming from, as most of you know, coming from an approach where activation and inhibition was very much put together by Pascual Leone in particular, that was the beginning of my work on lifespan, trying to put all of this together. And another nice feature, I believe, of putting together lifespan and child, or adults, I should say, lifespan approaches and children developmental approaches is that it forces one to put together both qualitative and quantitative perspectives. Also, it forces one to combine an interest for developmental and individual differences. An adult lifespan researcher is forced to look into individual differences. Those are so important across the adult lifespan that one has to provide some hypotheses to understand them. And this also forces one to combine a psychometric and a developmental approach. Yet there have been very few, still up to this day, very few empirical studies that have been using exactly the same paradigms in children and in old, in adults and older adults. So similarities among the models, just to refresh, I don't think it has to be refreshed. We discussed this in the last 3 days, but I've put here a number of models that I believe, on one hand or in one way or another, do present strong similarities. And of course, Pasquale Leone's model is first, and then Cohen model, which I was surprised to hear Nelson saying yesterday that he considered it to be close to Badley's model. On my part, I have to say that I find, and I've taken two pictures of them, I find Nelson's model much closer to Pasquale Leone's model and this kind of approach than to Badley's model. And of course, the role of inhibition and the role of processing speed, and I should say, unfortunately, I'm going to show you too that processing speed is important, empirically speaking. So all of these models bring one to adopt a multivariate approach in which different processes are considered to influence performance. And here I will really focus essentially today on age differences and developmental differences. So the lifespan theories, as I already said, force us to consider change in a multidimensional, multidirectional perspective. And this is something that I believe we have not done enough, even with children only. And we just cannot consider individual differences as mere variations around a single mechanism. And I'm trying to show this to you today. So just as a kind of, it's not as nice as the picture you showed the other day, Juan, but just as a reminder, Pasquale Leone's model is intrinsically a model of several mechanisms jointly influencing behavior or performance. Very close here, taken an older picture too, but very close here. If you just look even visually, I think that these two models are very close. Now, from a developmental point of view, if I am going to focus essentially on these three mechanisms that Pasquale Leone suggested, that is executive, and inhibition, and the influence in M. And here, I've just tried, I don't know whether Juan agrees with this, but I just tried to visually picture an interplay, developmental interplay, between the M operator, the I operator, and executive schemes. And the idea here is that the younger age, you should change. You should first note from across we theoretical ages an increase in size of the number of elements that can be activated, a change in intensity or efficacy of inhibition that I tried to picture in different colors. I don't think it shows very well in the back of the room. And the idea that the increase with age in childhood is at least a three level, the number of elements that can be activated, the efficacy of disactivation, and it might be the number, the quantity of irrelevant information that has to be inhibited, and perhaps the efficacy of that inhibition, and finally the complexity and efficacy of executive schemes. So what I take from here, really, is what Pasquale Leone has been writing for so many years. He told us the other day, I don't want to repeat, but how many years he has been working on that, that there are several mechanisms and global mechanisms that account for performance and for developmental change in the way of over-determination. And I think this is very important. So if I make a very cursory review of literature, very, very cursory, one can say that there are a number of general mechanisms that have been invoked for developmental change or have been studied at the macro level, processing speed or activation. And I'll come back to this lightning of activation and processing speed, inhibition, executive scheme, working memory, or sometimes even fluid intelligence and crystallized intelligence. And one of the interests also of going into a lifespan approach is that if one is looking only into children, all of these mechanisms co-vary in the same direction. So if there is a change, it's sometimes difficult to to, if they do not change in the same way, it might be difficult to dissociate them, to disentangle them. Whereas if you look at older adults, the decline is not exactly the same, whether it's, of course, less steep than in children, but some of them, like executive scheme or crystallized intelligence, may remain stable longer. So it may help supporting the hypothesis about the role of different underlying global mechanisms. So the general question we've been asking for a number of years now is it possible, empirically speaking, of course, to go towards global versus specific mechanism to account for age difference in working memory on or in fluid intelligence? Is there one or several mechanisms driving developmental change? And even though all of us speak of different processes, very often if you reflect on developmental theories, they are what we've been calling unidimensional. Even when they use different tasks, very often one thinks in terms of a single mechanism along which development is occurring. Of course, another question is whether are these the same mechanisms to account for change in children and in older adults? It should be. After all, we are the same individuals across life, but nevertheless, it could be interesting to see whether the same global processes can be invoked to account for change. Are there both developmental and individual differences in the way these different mechanisms interplay? And as I just said, looking into older adulthood might point to the existence of different underlying mechanisms. So working memory capacity here, I see, just to give again a very global and rough definition. For me, working memory is not a system. Working memory is working memory tasks that are construed as indexing general and limited resources, attentional resources. So they require controlled attention. And working memory does change with age. We had ample evidence over these few days and over many years. And they might change, and I would just like to illustrate what I mean by maybe different developmental and individual differences in the way of different processes playing in. They change at least. I mean, working memory performance in working memory tasks change for at least three reasons. And we had some very nice example yesterday in some of the talk. It changes by the number of chunks that can be attended. So that would be kind of the strength and breadth of activation. And again, I believe that activation is very close to processing speed. I don't know whether it is because one is faster than one can activate more items, or whether it's because one can activate more items than that he or she is faster. I have no idea. Just would like to take processing speed as an index of activation. A second reason why working memory capacity increases or maybe decreases with age is in terms of the choice of the relevant items to be activated. That's what's called executive schemes or executive function. And then a third reason for change in working memory capacity is the efficient suppression or damping of irrelevant items. And again, working memory capacity is not only a task to index developmental differences, but also to assess individual differences in a way that these various, I don't know whether I want to call these processes, these three reasons for increase or change in working memory capacity, this reason may act in an optional manner. That is, some individuals may reach the same performance for one or the other of these three reasons. To give you a very simplistic example, let's take a theoretical task, a hypothetical situation in which, for whatever reason, there are 8 units that could be considered relevant and are kind of readily accessible and should be taken into account for a high-level performance, and 3 irrelevant units of information. And there might be differences in activation, the number of units effortfully activated, the choice of the units to activate or inhibit, and the number of irrelevant units being actively dampened and maybe more or less strongly suppressed. So at the very first age, for instance, at 3 years of age, at 5 years of age, children could maybe actively activate effortfully 4 units. One is missing here. Never mind. So they actually activate, indeed, in my graph here, 3, they activate 4 units. 3 units are really effortfully activated. Unfortunately, one of these units is just not relevant. It should be inhibited, but it's kind of badly chosen. So 3 units are effortfully activated, and 1 unit is rather weakly, but nevertheless effortfully inhibited. And once again, just to make the case, what the child would inhibit a relevant unit. Now, young adults, who are supposed to be the most efficient in terms of activation, they are going to choose among these choices here 8 units. They will effortfully activate 6 relevant units and strongly inhibit 2 irrelevant units. So their performance will be kind of optimal in this situation. It's a bit difficult to activate more units. I suppose that Pasquale Leone can see why I chose these kind of numbers in terms of the units. But the idea is to play both on the number of units and on the activation and on the choice of the units being activated. Now, by 60 or over years of age, there might be 6 units chosen, so a slightly smaller number, and also with slightly less activation. It is still effortfully activated. The choice is still very good, but the activation itself is somewhat less strong. And likewise, inhibition is likewise a little bit less strong than in younger age. So there are different ways of reaching perhaps different levels of performance. So if I apply this to an individual differences approach, following what Reclin suggested in terms of vicarious or optional processes, I would say that these 3 individuals may actually present exactly the same performance, but on relying on different processes. In this individual here, he or she actually activates strongly few units. Nevertheless, because he is able to inhibit efficacy a number of irrelevant units, he has an as good performance as somebody who is able to activate many more units and with no inhibition. Or that this individual who activates strongly 5 units but inhibits less strongly the irrelevant units. Of course, all this is very theoretical. It's very difficult to make it operational. But I think we have to think in terms of these terms, both in terms of developmental and individual differences. Okay, now to come to somebody which is a little bit, something which is a little bit easier to make empirical, here is the kind of general framework we've been adopting in the last number of years to see whether age differences, whether in working memory tasks or, for instance, in fluid intelligence, I will give a few examples, whether these age differences are mediated by global factors here, maybe some other ones here, that by cascade kind of influence will influence performance in working memory tasks that will in turn influence performance in cognition. So I will today very fast give just a very brief and superficial feeling, I should say, even maybe more than presentation of our approach along these lines by presenting four studies. In the first two studies, they were cross-sectional lifespan studies in which we were interested in the interplay between processing speed inhibition, working memory capacity, and for the second study also, the fluid intelligence with the Raven matrices. In study three, and I could not resist of coming with some suggestion tasks here in this context, I will give somewhat more details on that, and it will focus on the role of working memory capacity in accounting for age differences in Piagetian tasks. This was, by the way, a longitudinal study. And then in study four, which actually is a subpart of study two here, I will focus asking the same type of question as in study three. I will focus on the Raven matrices task. So in studies one and two, as I said, it was two lifespan studies to assess whether, of course, would be age differences in working memory capacity, whether these age differences would be comparable in old adulthood or in childhood, and what the role of speed and resistance to interference and inhibition would account jointly for age differences in working memory tasks. In the study one, we used about a dozen tasks of working memory speed inhibition to about 400 participants, children between 8 and 12 years of age, young adults, and older adulthood. In study two, we used more tasks. Study two was more focused on inhibition, actually. But here, I take it only today, only at the very general level for the relation between speed, working memory, and inhibition. So the model and the experimental design, and again, we can go into more detail if you wish, was to use a number of tasks. These are salt house-like kind of global processing speed tasks. Here we use the Stroop and the proactive interference negative priming task for to index inhibition. For working memory, we used visuospatial three visuospatial working memory tasks and a verbal working memory task. Study two was about the same design, except there were many more inhibition tasks, but again, the same kind of idea. Inhibition was, well, that was very theoretical, with different type of inhibition tasks. And then we had here processing speed, working memory task, and the Raven task. So that's where we can test a little bit more. Here, I don't have age, but again, what our interest is in age differences in working memory task and in the Raven's task. So just to show first, in study one, of course we do have change with age in age differences, but we also have a very large inter-individual variability at all ages. So that if you look at the overlap between children, young adults, and older adults, it is very large. I mean, the mean of standardized scores are the numbers of figures written here, so you can see there is big change with age, and that's centered to young adults. But nevertheless, there is a very large inter-individual variability. Processing speed is I forgot to say that's all the tasks together. Processing speed is the one evidencing the largest age differences, interference somewhat less. Likewise, just to invade you with data. It's just the same second study. I mean, the age differences, the age sample is not exactly the same, but the age differences are obvious across the lifespan, but again, very, very large inter-individual variability. So there were slightly less age differences in the second study, probably due to the age samples used and also to the fact that we had many more inhibition tasks. I have to point also, because some of you have worked in that direction too, that in both studies it was somewhat difficult. We managed, but it was somewhat difficult to construct a latent score of inhibition. Now, coming back to the model, but this time from a statistical point of view, in both studies, this is the first study, the general model could be used, except we could not use the executive function trust I had put into the battery. The model were usually rather good. The same architecture was valid for testing or for studying children with young adults and young adults with older adults. But the parameters were not the same. And we could not, the model, if we constrained the parameters to be equal for the two subsamples, the model turned very bad. Likewise here, and again, not going into details, we have exactly the same picture, except that the tasks are different. That is, the overall architecture is the same when one compares children, young adults, or young and older adults. So the general model fits, is the best fit in the two subsamples. However, the parameters cannot be constrained to be identical. So a summary of this structural equation modeling for two studies is that a three-factor model proved best in both studies. We also tested the single general factor. It was a bad fit. So we need a three-factor model. We had, as I said already, a general, similar general architecture for both age periods. So that's what's called configurational invariance. But it was not possible to use the same parameters using multi-group analysis. So the invariance is only in the configuration, but is not metric, which leads us to conclude that it's the same processes, at least with respect to those stars, that drive age differences across the lifespan, but with a different weight. And indeed, you didn't have time to see it, and I didn't comment on this, but speed seems to play a more important role to capture age differences from 8 to 20, let's say. And inhibition seems to play a more important role when comparing adults. Going into the third study, in which I am going to spend a little bit more time, we were interested in one of the links. That is a link between attentional capacity or working memory capacity and performance in the Piagetian tasks. So in that study, and as I said, it was part of a large longitudinal study, we used two of Pasquale Leone's measure for attentional capacity or working memory capacity. And we used three Piagetian tasks, the balance tasks that I had been working on many years earlier, the folding of lines, and we'll show it, and the island. So longitudinal study we had that was a cross-sequential design, four cohorts, 5, 6, 8, and 10 years of age that we followed for 5 years. The attentional capacity tasks were administered each year. The Piagetian tasks were administered only 3 times. So these are some of the two Piagetian tasks, Mr. Pinnett, the two attentional capacity tasks, sorry, Mr. Pinnett adapted from Case Cocuit, in which one has to retain either only the position or the positions and their colors. And here is the famous CSVI task adapted to Geneva from Pasquale Leone, in which more or less complex stimuli are presented. Here's the, I guess that most of you know, the balance task. We use two type of items, the items that we called A. We just put on weight like here, and we asked the children to decide whether the balance would be level if it was left free, and items B, where they have to construct equilibrium. And the score was 6-ordered level in terms of dimensions of transformation, which is the theoretical framework I had with different tasks used with Jacques Lautre and Laurence Ribon. We used the islands task, which is a task that has not been used so much after the classical Piagetian task, but which is just one has a house here, and one has to build the same house on a different surface, hence the name of islands. And one has to just have the same volumes. And you know, well, the difficulties that children have with going beyond borders, height. And then we used a task of mental imagery, the folding of lines task, in which one has to imagine the result of folding the sheet from the bottom to the top in half. And some items are relatively easy, others, like this one, is very difficult. So again, to illustrate my points today, I will just focus on very gross, very descriptive analysis of regression and commonality. The question is, and was, what part of the variance in the Piagetian task is accounted for by the working memory capacity tasks? What is accounted for by age alone, taking the performance in the Piagetian task, by attentional capacity task alone, and by both? And then, in a second part of the analysis, focusing only on the age-related variance. Lise Swanson presented very, very nice analysis yesterday in the same direction. These ones are really very rough analysis that they should be considered, of course, only as descriptive. So here we go. In the Piagetian task on year two, which is the first year that the balance task and the island task were administered. So you have the total variance here, the items A, so parts of the items of the balance task, balance B, where the children have to make the balance level provided with a number of weights, the islands here, and the folding of lines. That big part here is the age-related variance. So the variance in, if I take this graph here, the first part, this is unique age, the part of the variance that is uniquely accounted by age. The second, the purple part here, is the amount of variance, total variance, uniquely accounted for by attentional capacity tasks. And the largest part here is the amount of variance accounted for by the two factors together. And the gray part is the unexplained variance, individual differences in other terms. So one can see here that age and working memory capacity account together, alone or together, for more than 50% of the total variance in the Piagetian task. Again, remember we have only from, in that case, the children were from 6 to 10 years of age, which is only a 4-year span. Now focusing on only the age-related variance, most of it is shared with the attentional capacity task. One could already see this in the preceding graph, of course, but about all of the variance, almost all of the variance, is shared with attentional capacity tasks. By the way, we did it the other way around, trying to see whether the Piagetian tasks would account for the age-related variance and the attentional capacity task. It doesn't work as nicely. So, as I said, most of the variance is accounted for by attentional capacity. Just, I am not going to spend as much time on the longitudinal aspect, but what is interesting to point to is that this is the second administration of the Piagetian task, and one can see that the role of individual differences is increasing. Nevertheless, in terms of age-related variance, it's just the same picture. Almost all of age-related variance is accounted for by attentional capacity task. And likewise, I'm going fast, in the third administration of the task. Now, last study that I wanted to mention this morning, this was exactly the same question as in the study three, that is, to what extent does working memory capacity account for age differences in intelligence using this time the Ravens matrices? So we use the Ravens matrices. We also had measures of processing speed and interference. we use different measures of working memory capacity, and we could test this also in older adults, not only in young children. Here we have the sample described. So it's again the same design, 8 to 12 years of age, young adults, older adults, and a number of tasks that I'm very briefly going to describe because there are a bit less. So that's the reading span task that we used, in which one has to process a sentence while retaining the last word. And this is the visual spatial working memory task that we used, using either simple words, simple locations, or words and locations to be retained. Then we used, as I said, Salthouse-like processing speed tasks, which are rather global. They are not very basic processing speed tasks. One has to remember this too. And we used a number of interference tasks. At least I've put here those that I've been using in the analysis that I will describe. We used more than that. So we used a Stroop in two, we used the Stroop in two versions, the classical Stroop here and a dissociated Stroop. We used a hailing task with high-close sentences that one has to provide an unexpected ending for, directed forgetting task. Here are just the same analysis as the ones I conducted with precision tasks in terms of explained variance, but we have more of those because we have more different types of tasks. So this is the total variance here in children and young adults and here in young and older adults, and it is a bit complex. I think what can really just take from there is that there is no single variable that accounts for a large part of the variance. The largest contributor is age and speed and working memory here. That's this yellow part. That's the case in all, in the two subsamples. But this is particularly true in children. Now, to make it a little bit easier to read and simpler and more interesting, is to focus on the age-related variance only and the Raven's task. And you can see here, this is speed only. This is working memory capacity, and this is speed and working memory. Likewise here, you can see the largest part is speed and working memory, speed alone and working memory capacity alone. So one can see that speed is a little bit more, takes a little bit more importance in children, whereas working memory takes somewhat more importance in older adults. Inhibition alone is just not much, but it comes back again here combined with working memory and speed in older adults. Okay, that was a very fast gallop to go across these four studies. But just to give you a glimpse of the kind of questions and how we try to respond to them. So in the first two studies, one has first to see that it's possible to construct latent variables of these three global mechanisms that I was mentioning at the beginning of the talk, that is working memory, processing speed, inhibition, although it is much harder for inhibition to construct a latent variable. So to some extent, at least, it seems possible to consider them as global mechanism resources to account for age differences. Remember, we in these two studies, we were focusing on the effect of age. Although these three variables correlate, a model in three factors is necessary, is better at least, than a model with only one variable. Using a model with three factors allows one to play with their respective role, as I tried to illustrate at the beginning. That means several mechanisms are at work to account for age differences, whether in working memory tasks or in Raven's matrices. The same model, again, can be used to model age differences across the lifespan, but the coefficients differ, which means, again, to generalize somewhat more, that the same processes are at work throughout the lifespan, but that their relative weight differs. inhibition and working memory capacities tend to play a somewhat larger role in older adulthood and speed in childhood. Most of the age differences in the precision task are accounted for by the attentional capacity task. However, there remain, as we've seen, important individual differences beyond age differences, and these are not captured by working memory capacity. And moreover, what is interesting and probably attests to strategies being set into place, the relative contribution of such individual differences tend to increase across the longitudinal study. And study 4 showed us that speed and working memory account once again for a large part of the variance and of the age-related variance in the Ravens matrices. And again, although the general pattern is similar when comparing the younger part of life and the latter part of life, again, as the same pattern seems at work, the relative weight of each mechanism is not exactly the same, and the role of speed in this case seems more important for children. So I would say that these four studies do, but we are in an audience that seems to be very convinced of the importance of global mechanism, but these four studies support the existence of global mechanism at work, which are the same across the lifespan, but which may change in their relative role, which allows us, again, to, up to a certain extent, consider them as vicarians. Vicarians is the idea to rely more, that individuals can rely more on one process than on the other, depending on the situation, of course. Okay. Thank you very much, and thank you for all the group that helped us collecting all of this data. You have the latter group here, but many more collaborators function in all of these studies. Thank you.
Thank you, Annick.
Thank you, Annick. That was very interesting. And it reminds me, actually, I have for the last few years been thinking about a result that is appears in the literature on cognitive processes, especially memory types, but also reasoning, and that involves comparisons of younger and older people. And what one finds that there is situations in which, while it's generally known that older people don't perform very well, there are situations in which, in fact, they perform just as well as young adults. And so there is a great debate about whether this invalidates theories that talk about age deficits. But now the interesting thing is that the age differences actually disappear in result in conditions that involve tasks that are very self-relevant to older people, which means that in those situations, older people perform often just as well as younger people. But conversely, younger people aren't really very much affected by this self-relevance issue. And so I think that if we talk about processing speed, and you actually use the term activation, and I tend to use the term activation actually when I talk about emotional processes, but perhaps it would be wise to think about processing speed maybe as involving a purely kind of a brute forced executive, you know, a processing force, but also a more automatic component, like in emotion processing, that that may, in some sense, I think you would say boost maybe the efficacy of executive processes. And that is actually an effect that has long been known in the literature on stress and emotion processing, and now even in the cooperation of different structures of the brain. And so I thought that maybe we could talk about that more. That would be very, very exciting actually to try to tease out what in the age differences are the different contributions of these processes. But that would be a very dramatic example where one has very clearly, in some tasks and some conditions, one has no difference in performance between younger and older people, but at the same time, I think dramatically different processes that underlie this equality of performance.
Yeah, I agree with this. Well, I don't fully agree with all what you said, but I mean, if you think in terms of these three global parts, it could very well be the case that in the task in which there is no difference, age difference, or even it's better for older adults, is that the choice of the unit, as I called it here, in default of better terms, might be better in older adults. Now, one point in terms of activation, I think one has to make a clear difference. And somebody like Engel did not do it at the beginning. One has to make a clear difference between automatic activation, that is kind of spreading automatically, and effortful activation. And effortful activation would be very limited and is probably not as efficient in older adulthood. But the automatic activation of irrelevant information can be even more prepotent in older adults. Just as an aside, in one of the theses that was conducted in our lab by Christophe Delalloy and trying to tease out controlled and automatic processes, the age differences were on the automatic processes more than on the controlled ones, which of course did not please too much to Jacobi, but it was really, there were more age differences on the automatic part of it, which is one way of teasing apart the different setting. But I think that if one adopts a general framework like this very simplistic one here, one can play with these kind of things and try to tease out the different mechanisms.
You now actually talk more about the problem of interfering activation, but I'm actually also talking about tasks in which the activation is a plus to performance.
Yes. No, I agree, but you can play around differently with it.
Also because the inhibition we already know from...
Contrarily to what the cognitive aging literature leads us to believe, these are all of the inhibition tasks in which we had least age differences, once, of course, controlled for processing speed. And there were very little age differences in those times.
I think that was very interesting. And there are so many aspects one could comment, but I want to come back to speed. You have presented speed in a light which is complementary to Demetrius, to my mind, you seem to find that the speed may be the dominant factor in young children, and in older people, the dominant factor is inhibition and working memory, and that raises two issues. To me, one, what is the meaning of speed? And I, for many years, I guess this is my kind of common sense, but I always have thought that in most people, speed is just a way of appraising performance level at a higher optimizing function, assuming that it is a speed for performing well. And if that were the case, your results make a lot of sense. That may not be the case for certain pathological conditions. because then the implication, and this is a question, I am going to say what I read, and I like your reaction. One could then perhaps could say that to appraise children performance, in fact, since children basically function well in all their multiple determinants, behavior being overdetermined by all these many factors that interact dynamically, if every constituent, in principle, functions well, you appraise the level of performance by speed, the degree of optimization of that performance. Of course, as you grow older, one or another constituent begins to function anomalously. And then the main determinants of the performance level will not be overall performance, optimized speed, but rather one or the other constituents. And you have found, in part, I presume, because of the measures you have used, inhibition and working memory to be the main ones. And so that leads, one question I have asked is whether you agree or can comment on this analysis. And the other, it occurred to me also that if this way of thinking is sensible, then would it be possible to think of using this kind of analysis to appraise at what age in gerontology or for certain populations that transition from a speed to one or another function occurs, because that would mark perhaps rather early the beginning of breakdowns from optimal performance of the constituents?
Yeah. I have no response to the second question, of course. For the first one, on one hand, what you are saying is that if one considers speed as optimizing performance, then it would be the general factor, which I'm not convinced of. For me, speed, the way it's been studying here, I mean, these are tasks that are used in the cognitive aging literature that we use most of the time. Only Cale used such tasks in children, at least until a few years ago. These tasks are not very basic speed tasks, indeed. But for me, they theoretically were closer to what I called activation also, or to what you call activation. So it's not the general factor. But it may well be the case that it is the factor that counts most in children, which is not exactly the same. Because if it was just being, you know, having kind of an optimal performance, then we should find a good model when we put speed on top. And of course I did try. I mean, if I was calling myself Tim Salthouse, I would not even have tried another model. I would have put speed there, accounting or not. That's not such a bad factor, but it's such a bad model, but it's significantly better. My model is significantly better here for the two studies than one in which speed would be kind of encompassing. Second question, you probably are right, but the problem is that one would need to study finer age groups than we have here and to see the relative weight. It's just so heavy. These type of studies are just so heavy that I'm not sure I'm ready to launch. Well, the one we are using now is also, conducting now is also very heavy, but we should conduct this kind of studies more often. As I mentioned to you yesterday, Berlin is the favorite place where such studies can be conducted.
While you've got this slide up, I was just thinking about something. I don't know if I'm thinking about this right, but this kind of model assumes that the effects of these variables are linear, and of course age is curvilinear. So what I'm wondering is maybe you're saying the reason that the overall model with all three groups didn't fit has to do with different weightings, but have you tried, like, if you took the age variable and recoded it so that, I don't know, 20 is the peak and then you have absolute value of distance from 20 or something in such a way, in other words, recode it in such a way that it makes sense to be a linear variable, you know, so that the distance from peak age or something like that, and scaled in some way, then maybe the whole thing would fit with one set of weights.
We have several problems. This is an interesting question, but this is precisely because of that curvilinear aspect that we analyzed separately young and older adults and children and young adults, of course. Second difficulty is that if I was going your way, the problem is that 1 year in childhood is about 8 years in older adults.
Right, right. So I'm saying
so
scale.
Going
I agree.
The other way around.
I agree. I said something about scaling. You know, I don't know how you do it, but if you did scale it so it made sense, that's a different. And then if it did fit, that would show that those differences in the weights of the paths is not the reason it didn't fit before. It's the curvilinear of age.
Okay. Well, we did it with curvilinear or with quadratic age when we studied with older adults, just to see whether it worked better. I don't remember whether in this particular data here, age was just age or age plus age squared. But you do this only with older adults because there is a hypothesis that it might not be linear indeed. I don't know. It's difficult to scale because, I mean, the change you've seen also from the descriptive data, the change is so much larger over 4 or 5 years in childhood, or 10 or 12 years if we take for the youngest child to the median age of young adult, whereas in older adulthood, we go from 60 to 85. And of course, fortunately, it is much flatter. So there is a point in what you say here.
Another question?
Yeah, right. I was very interested by your ideas about there might be three factors in working memory in your diagram about the number of chunks, the ability to choose elements, and the efficiency of inhibition. And I wondered if one way of taking that forward might be, instead of simply putting in reading span as some, well, the span scores are something that you're trying to predict, I wonder if there's some merit in, I know some people have looked at intrusion errors in these span tasks, so that would be a failure to inhibit items and, as it were, measures of processing speed within the task, so that you, instead of taking a span score, you find a way of decomposing it and then relating it to your underlying factors.
Yeah. Well, we did not do this in this particular analysis, but we actually have a paper. I was looking in the room, but I think Christelle, who has been in charge of that paper lately, is preparing, this is an announcement I have to make, is preparing the material for that. But we have a paper submitted in terms of intrusion in the reading span task and age differences there, and the type of age differences.
Yeah. And does it come out as you would, in line with your expectations? Or?
Yeah, well, in this case, what I think we did, but not in this analysis, is to use the intrusion error here in terms of inhibition. And actually, in the proactive interference task, we devised that to go along what you said. Proactive interference task was just, you know, classical list of words that with progressive building of interference, like three times a list of animals and then release from proactive interference. And actually what worked best here was not the index of interference that we constructed, but the number of intrusions from the previous list, precisely. So it goes to the direction.
So thank you, Annick.